Back together again, you and I chatting it up, starting off a new week and a new month on this June 1st, 2026 on Connecticut Today. I commented on a Hearst Connecticut media report that about 40% of all state House and state Senate races could be uncontested this coming November. Is that bad for local democracy or just the will of the people? We welcomed Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill to chat about multiple state and national topics with his weekly update, while we also replayed segments from Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy's appearance Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation. Disturbing story, I think, really, when you talk about it from a civic point of view, from a civic duty point of view. Ken Dixon's story. Ken's been on this show a number of times in previous years. Good guy. Here's the headline. Candidates in dozens of Connecticut legislative races may run unopposed in the November ballot. Did you realize, according to the numbers now, this may end up changing as we said here, but do you realize here that about just a tick, just a fraction over 40% of all the General Assembly races in the state may have no opposition to whomever or whoever or whom, I always get confused with that one, to whomever is the incumbent there. Now, you're always going to have uncontested races, especially on the state legislative level in all states, not just Connecticut. Sometimes districts are so blue or so red, it doesn't really make any sort of sense for people to run, even if they can get that public financing, which, you know, you can get that for a state house or a state senate seat. I think it's something like $85,000 to run a state senate campaign and something like 40-something thousand to run a state house campaign. Which, to me, now, you have to get... You have to end up getting, a certain amount of, you know, donations of a certain dollar total in a certain denomination to qualify for that. So if you want to do the legwork and press the flesh a little bit, they'll give you the money. So what's the problem here? I don't understand it. Now, I know it's tough for somebody to want to mount a campaign and go press the flesh and do all that stuff when you know, if you're a Democrat in an 80% Republican-leaning district, or if you're a Republican in a 75 or 70% leaning district, you may say, the hell am I doing here? Even if somebody wants to give me the money to run. But that's 40%. Now, things may end up changing a little bit here and there before we get the official ballots from Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas's office. But how's that treating you, huh? Knowing that as a taxpayer here in the great and wonderful state of Connecticut, the People's Republic of Connecticut, the real DPRC, you've got 40% of legislative seats that at this point may not have any challengers. What does that make you feel like? Or do you care? You probably don't care. Now, it's interesting. For as much as I get on this case, Bob Duff makes an interesting point here in this article. And again, it comes down to money. Now, I know a lot of you people jumped crazy on me and see, I was proven right. They needed a raise a couple of years ago, and they went from like 24,000 to like 40-something thousand, and there's apparently another raise coming up. So the current base salary, in other words, before you get money for being a majority leader or a minority leader or a deputy leader, and you and your stipend for driving, the current base salary is $43,600. Now, I know what you're saying. Well, Paul, it's a part-time job, but it's really not, because you've got constituent events, you've got informational meetings, You've got public hearings, even when they're not officially gaveled in. You know what I mean? And the top leaders are about $54,000, $55,000, $56,000 around there, something around there. So again, I know you're going to jump on me here, but would we get fewer uncontested races if we paid people more? I know what you're saying. Well, they should want to do it because of love of their country. And they say, come on, stop it. This is not the agrarian days anymore. I know this whole thing with a citizen legislature is quaint, but people got bills to pay. Ain't nothing going on but the rent, as the great philosopher Gwen Guthrie once said. Bob Duff points something out here. I wanted to give him props on this. The average per capita state income here in Connecticut is $56,000. The current base salary for a lawmaker in Hartford is 43.6. Does that make any sense? Seriously. I'm not saying giving more people is the be-all and end-all and helps everything, but does that make any sense? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, or are you of the opinion, hey, Paul, nobody wants to run from the other side, from the Republican side or the Democratic side? Because this happens in both districts, you know, both parties here. It's about three or four times more prevalent if you're a Democrat running against nobody on the Republican side than vice versa. But are you also maybe of the opinion, hey, let's stop begging people to run for office? If nobody cares enough, then so be it. Let's go over a host of stuff, a cornucopia of stuff. Terry Cowgill joins us, columnist for the Connecticut News Junkie, and nationally he does his stuff on Substack.com, red meat for mushy moderates. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir, and how might you be on this first day of a new month?
Well, I'm fine, but the rent is too damn high.
You like that?
You know who that... That was a fellow named Jimmy McMillan.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually founded his own political party.
Yes.
Named, aptly enough, the Rent is Too Damn High Party.
I just remember those mutton shops that he had. Oh, my God. Those would have made Elvis cry. They were so good.
Right. And he most famously ran for governor in 2010.
Yeah.
But it didn't go very far. Andrew Cuomo was a shoo-in that year. He was a pretty humorous guy, and that message really resonated more than any message I can recall.
Yeah, simple stuff. You know, I don't think he had a high-paid consultants for that. All right, let's go over a few things here. I've been taking calls the last hour or so on this Graham Plattner thing. I don't think, you know what, Terry? I don't think the guy's toast. I think he's going to win. And I think people root for the uniform, and long gone are the days where this would make too many people gasp. I think he wins. What do you say?
I'm not sure he's out of the woods yet. Okay. I know he's trying to ride this out, and he's rolled out his wife, who did some sort of Instagram video where she's walking around and saying that, you know, they tried to work out these difficult things in their marriage. But the sexting part, you know, he did this allegedly during the campaign. So this is not, it's not like he suddenly made a turnaround and decided to act like an angel or anything. And I find the whole argument or his defense of the Nazi tattoo to be completely unconvincing. Because he had that tattoo for, 18 years?
Mm-hmm.
And he only discovered when reporters questioned him that it was a Nazi symbol? You would think that in those 18 years, somebody saw the tattoo and came up to him and said, hey, you know, that looks like the Nazi death head. Yeah, it makes no sense. So I don't know that he would, you know, it's possible that he will ride this out and become the nominee simply because there's nothing else. The governor... Janet, I forget her name.
Mills.
She dropped out because she was having trouble raising money.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether they can try to bring her back in or not, and whether she would consider it.
Yeah.
And there was one other person running in the Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's not well known. I don't know his name off the top of my head.
Yeah.
He might squeeze in. Plattner might squeeze through as mm-hmm. the nominee, just because there's nobody else in the waiting.
High-ranking Democrat Bob Duff, Norwalk here, looks to be the heir apparent to succeed Martin Looney, wants to tack a 100% tax or a surcharge or something to anybody who might benefit from this $2 billion fund of people that were wronged on January 6th and whatever. Now, that's probably a moot point because we just got word earlier that the White House is going to abide and the president is going to abide by, I guess, a judge who said you can't do that. But the fact that Bob Duff and some other folks in other states, as you point out, Terry, we're going to try this. God, that would have been some great court theater that I guess we're not going to get now.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it was dumb to propose this in the first place.
Oh, God.
I call it a thug fund. That's really what it is. Defending the paying off essentially Trump's friends. I think Trump probably felt guilty about sending them over there. And inspiring a riot. So he thought, well, I'll do something. I'll pardon them and then I'll give them some money.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give them taxpayer money, of course. But Duff, you know, proposing this, he's sort of copying what others are doing. Gavin Newsom has proposed this in California. They're considering it in New York State, Illinois, and New Jersey. They're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there could be there would be lots of grounds to challenge this in court. You know, it could be 14th Amendment problems with equal protection of the law.
Yeah.
Because anytime you single out one specific group for unfavorable treatment, it's said to be might be a violation of the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bill of attainder concerns, which is similar to that. And also, it's, you know, if Congress passes a law, and a state says we're going to tax it 100%, then you've got a problem with what they might be the supremacy clause,
sure,
of the Constitution, where the federal the states cannot interfere with federal law by passing laws that are essentially negate the federal law. So there could be all kinds of problems with this. But yeah, Bob Duff, and you know, I mean, I don't know why he's looking for the publicity or what. But he's probably going to be the next majority leader in the House.
Yeah.
So he'll have plenty of publicity.
Yeah, sure, as he replaces Marty Looney. And let's end on this. Your national column, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, Be Still My Heart, Simple Solutions, Outlaw Private Schools. What are you doing here, Terry? What?
Yeah, well, this is what, of course, I am not proposing this. Somebody else did.
Yeah.
And I essentially took apart the argument because, first of all, full disclosure, I am a product of private schools.
Yep.
My father taught in private schools, mm-hmm. so I was a faculty brat in the private schools.
Yep.
I taught in them for 12 years. So I don't have a great understanding of public schools in a first hand sense.
Mm-hmm.
This fellow, and he was writing for Gawker, which I'm sure you realize that Gawker is bankrupt now, thanks to J.D. Vance's mentor, Peter Thiel.
Yep.
But he says, and one of the things that he says, basically, if you force rich people to send their kids to public schools, the public schools will get better.
Huh.
And there is a certain logic to that, right? But you could say that about just about anything.
Yeah.
So if you, for example, if rich people were forced by law to take the subway to work, then public transportation would surely improve. We all know that. If the wealthy were compelled to dine at soup kitchens, then the less fortunate would definitely eat better.
Yeah.
So you could make that argument all down the line. But ultimately, it would never happen. You know why? Because 75% of private schools in this country are religious affiliated.
Oh, yeah.
And so you'd have constitutional problems there in terms of freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never happen. But I did think it was interesting to read about, certainly. And I always give people a break, and I like people who take a chance in their columns and propose something that's provocative, and then let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely. So, folks, check out Terry's column here, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. He does posture some interesting arguments here as to why this might be a good idea, but it's never going to come to fruition. And always check him out at the Connecticut News Junkie, CTNewsJunkie.com. Terry, always good to chat with you. Have a wonderful week, and we'll hook up hopefully next Monday. Thank you, sir.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Paul.
All right. Terry Cowgill there, the Connecticut News Junkie, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, and we move it along right here at WICC. All right, we'll get back to open phones after the news and traffic and weather together and all that. Bottom of the hour. Had to give you this. Yesterday, Chris Murphy was in Hartford, but he was linked up with Margaret Brennan and CBS's Face the Nation. And the senator, of course, with, I guess, some presidential aspirations. We kid about it now, but hey, it doesn't mean he won't get a cabinet post or whatever if the Dems win in 2028. So good 4.5 minutes here, and this will take us down to news just about. But I'm going to get your thoughts on this. And I know a lot of people on this program, and it's nothing personal here. I criticize Chris Murphy for his politics or whatever, and some of the stuff he says, too. He made an allegation about the NBA playoffs, too, the other day. We'll give you that one. But Chris Murphy with Margaret Brennan, the senator, is pumping a new book, and maybe he may be looking toward 2028, but I found this exchange quite interesting and maybe informative.
You have written this book that we mentioned, and I know that you said about it in a recent interview that 2028 Democratic contenders are texting you, talking to you about some of the ideas in it. Some of our recent CBS polling found that 62% of registered voters view the Democratic Party in a negative light. So how do you take these ideas, and what's the main one Democrats need to hammer home to redirect the party?
Yeah, this book is really about the spiritual crisis in the country that led to Donald Trump. This is a country that is feeling more lonely, more adrift, more exhausted by an economy that abuses workers, a culture in which we tell people that they can make themselves happy by just buying things instead of, you know, being active citizens. And so it's a book about the underlying work that we have to do to unrig the economy so that people feel purpose and value, and unrig our democracy so that people feel power. And that's what the book really is about, the emotional state of the country. Here's what I think Democrats need to do. They need to understand that people are furious at the fact that our politics have become captured, and people are feeling out of control of their lives because they think we're all corrupt. They don't think Donald Trump is just corrupt. They think everybody in politics is corrupt. So Democrats need to be much louder about the ways that we're going to get billionaire and corporate money out of our politics, because people don't believe us when we say we're going to fix the economy if we don't also tell them how we're going to fix our democracy.
Okay. Well, to that point about spirit and character, the campaign for Graham Plattner confirmed to CBS on Saturday that the main Senate candidate had sent sexually explicit texts to women other than his wife. This is in addition to other past controversies. Does he pass the character test?
Wait till you hear this one coming up. Here we go. Ready?
I have not followed this story as closely as others have. But,
right.
I mean, Graham Plattner is somebody that served our country. He served his community. He's also made mistakes, and he has admitted that. Character also involves standing up to people who are bankrupting and corrupting this country. And this race is going to be a contrast between somebody that has put his life on the line for this country against somebody that is literally empowering the moral hollowing out of our nation from the White House. So he certainly admitted that he has made mistakes, but I think this is going to be a pretty clear contrast in Maine between somebody who has spent his life protecting us versus somebody who seems to be protecting Donald Trump's corruption.
What about that Nazi tattoo?
You know, I want to ask you as well about an interview that aired right before this program with my colleague Rita Braver on CBS Sunday Morning. She interviewed the former First Lady Jill Biden about the new book she wrote, in which she talks about the infamous 2024 debate, where the then president really couldn't answer questions.
Nope.
She says a lot of things, including that she thought her husband was having a stroke because he was incomprehensible. She admits that she said to him afterwards that he's really screwed up. But that's what she's revealing now. Democrats stridently, including on this program, said time and again that his cognitive abilities were fine.
Yep.
How do you convince the public that Democrats are telling the truth now?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Soft shoe time. Here we go.
Yeah, listen, I think Democrats do have to be honest about the mistakes that we made in 2024. Obviously, in retrospect, Joe Biden should have stepped away from that race. We should have had an open contest. And in this book, I frankly talk about, you know, how tribal our politics have become.
Tribal.
How Republicans are willing to excuse Donald Trump's corruption because their entire identity structure is built around their party. And I think that happens on the Democratic side as well, where we are willing to look the other way too often at mistakes that our own party leaders are making. And this book says that that's, you know, not just up to politics to fix, that we actually have to create more healthy identity structures for people outside of politics so they see their purpose through their work or through their connection to a local community. That makes our politics less tribal and maybe allows us on both sides to stand up to our party when we think they've gone wrong.
Tribal, healthy identity. What did he say earlier in the segment there? Because of spirituality, Trump was elected. Oh, please, for freak's sake. Yeah, there's an angel looking at. I mean, come on. And notice that clip was, 4 minutes and 56 seconds or 4:36 or something like that. The print is too damn small. Did he come across with one policy idea where Margaret Brennan asked him, hey, all right, Senator, give us an example here. What? No, because he wouldn't, because they're not going to change. Do you understand that? They're not going to change. They know damn well what got Donald Trump elected in 2024. No matter what you think of him right now, it's one word, immigration. Second two words, the border. People said, enough, we can't do this, this has to stop. Why are they letting it go on? You know what else won Donald Trump the election? And this dopey Democratic autopsy said it. You know, the commercials and the people talking about biological men and young boys playing women's sports. It's been proven. They've done analysis of this stuff. It's in the Dems report. And Chris Murphy, God bless him, he's selling a book. I get it. I understand it. But we're talking about spirituality and a conflict of crisis. And, oh, God almighty, make it stop. I'm telling you, they're going to flame out on abortion again. I'm sorry, on immigration again. They're going to flame out on the whole immigration thing again and again and again. I don't know how they answer the question, but there you go. I just wanted to give you a little taste of that because it's interesting stuff. It's all I have to say. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So we'll get your thoughts on that. What did you think of that? And not just if you have a problem with Chris Murphy on policy or you don't like him. Millions of people do in this state. He wins. He gets every race he wins. Even back to his days in the General Assembly, he wins in blowouts. I get it. I understand it. But what are your thoughts on that? And I'd love to hear from you if you're a Democrat. If you're somebody that would never, ever, ever, ever vote for a Republican. You tell me what the deal is as we continue right here on WICC.